Can't Stop the Podcast. My name's Caleb. It's time for another round of Spirit Stories. You live in a physical world, but the spiritual world, it's just as real, and it's all around you. And good news, despite what the movies might try to sell you, you don't have to be afraid of it. Spirit Stories is a storytelling podcast where everyday people share their close encounters with the spiritual. Because when we engage the spirit realm alongside God, He uses it to grow and strengthen our faith. And thankfully, you don't have to just take my word on that. Every now and then, you bump up against a story that makes time stand still. It's one you'll sit in your car for, even after you arrive at your destination, because you gotta know how it ends. Fair warning, this is one of those stories. And while it is incredible, parents, you may want to preview it before letting little ears listen.
My name is Michael, and this is my spirit story. My story started in 2012 when my son was 11 years old. He was a runner, and he was running a lot and was getting good. And he was running more and more and eating less and less and was starting to lose weight. That was the summer of 2012. By the fall of 2012, he was noticeably losing weight. And in November, he actually collapsed at a meet and wound up in the hospital. So we started the journey with him through an eating disorder. As the eating disorder got better in late 2012 and early 2013, he started to have other problems. Self-harming started. As we got self-harming under control, we actually moved on to suicide attempts. And kind of were cycling through all kinds of problems that we couldn't figure out what was the core of all of it. But it became obvious that we could not keep him safe at home. So by the next summer, we sent him to a hospital in Wisconsin to seek treatment for the eating disorder and whatever else was going on. While he was there, we found out the cause of all of these problems was that he had been abused sexually over a long period of time by a family member, obviously without us knowing it. And him dealing with the stress and anxiety of that was what was causing all of these other issues. The great news is once he got that out, he was able to come home and started to do better. After he was home for a little while, he started experiencing what the doctors called post-traumatic stress disorder. Basically, things would happen that would remind him of the abuse, and he would throw himself on the ground. He would try and escape. He would punch. And I was the only one who could kind of control him. And the only way I could control him was to put my arms around him and hold him. Once I could actually look in his eyes and he could see my eyes, that was when he knew he was okay. So we went through a period of all of these PTSD attacks, and we couldn't figure out why they were happening or what was triggering them. One day, he had an experience of feeling like he was being attacked, and he actually jumped out of his bedroom window and landed on the driveway, broke most of the bones in his arms and his face. Amazingly, the doctors were able to put him back together physically, and he was home a couple weeks later. Just amazing that he was able to come home without brain damage, without any sort of major damage to his body. That was an amazingly difficult experience. But then once he was home and his body started to heal, he started to have more PTSD. And again, it became clear that we weren't able to keep him safe at home. So for the second time, we had to send him away for treatment. And this time it was at a place that kind of you go to if the first place didn't help you. So it was a more difficult place. It felt and looked like a jail. And the primary job was just to keep him alive and keep him safe. While he was there, he got one phone call home supervised by the therapist. And that was really the only interaction we had with the doctors and our son. And the first one of those calls was scheduled on the day I was supposed to be in a car driving to a business meeting with a guy that I barely knew named Kurt. I worked very hard to get out of that meeting, and Kurt would not let me out of that meeting. I told him I had a difficult conversation to have, and he said, "That's fine, I'll put my earbuds in and I won't listen." So I wound up in a car with a basic stranger while I was on the phone to my son in the hospital with his therapist. And it was an amazingly difficult and challenging car call, and there were lots of tears. As soon as I got off the phone, Kurt, this guy who I barely knew, looked over at me and said, "While you were on that call, God told me I'm supposed to fast for your son." So Kurt proceeded to fast that day for my son and said, "If I hear anything from God, I will give you a call and we'll connect on it." He called me a couple of days later and said, "Can we meet? I need to talk to you." When Kurt met with us, he said, "While I was fasting for your son, I had a vision of the devil standing by the window in his bedroom and your son sitting on the edge of his bed, and that I was standing in between the devil and my son, pacing back and forth, swinging a baseball bat, trying to protect him." He looks at me and he pokes me in the chest. "God told me to tell you that your son does not believe he can get better, that you, as the dad, are the only one that can convince him he can get better, and you have to make him believe that he can get better." And I just sort of blurted out, "Jesus, I believe. Help me with my unbelief." I'm not 100% sure at this point that I believe that my son can get better. And I have a trip coming up to see my son where I'm going to be alone with him basically for 4 days out at the place he was staying at the hospital. I went back to my house and pulled up where that phrase was from, "Jesus, I believe. Help me with my unbelief." It turns out that that phrase was uttered by a dad praying for his son to get better. It's from Mark 9, and this is how it goes. "When they came down to the other disciples, they saw a large crowd around them and the teachers of the law arguing with them. And as soon as all the people saw Jesus, they were overwhelmed with wonder and ran to greet him. 'What are you arguing with them about?' Jesus asked. A man in the crowd answered, 'Teacher, I brought you my son, who is possessed by a spirit that has robbed him of speech. And whenever it seizes him, it throws him to the ground. He foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth, and becomes rigid.'" Which is exactly how I would describe my son when he was having his PTSD episodes. "I asked your disciples to drive out that spirit, but they could not." "You unbelieving generation," Jesus replied, "how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy to me." So they brought him, and when the spirit saw Jesus, it immediately threw the boy into a convulsion. He fell to the ground and rolled around, foaming at the mouth. And Jesus asked the boy's father, "How long has he been like this?" "From childhood," he answered. "It has often thrown him into fire or water to kill him. But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us." "If you can," said Jesus, "everything is possible for one who believes." And immediately the boy's father exclaimed, "I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief." And when Jesus saw that the crowd was running to the scene, he rebuked the impure spirit. "You deaf and mute spirit," he said, "I command you, come out of him and never enter him again." The spirit shrieked, convulsed him violently, and came out. The boy looked so much like a corpse that many said, "He's dead." But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him to his feet, and he stood up. And after Jesus had gone indoors, his disciples asked him privately, "Why couldn't we drive it out?" And he replied, "This kind of spirit can come out only by prayer and fasting." I was like, oh, okay, there's a lot to unpack there. So Kurt points at me in the chest and says, "You're the one who has to make him believe." I scream, "I believe, help me with my unbelief." It comes from the Bible, from a father trying to save his son. And then it says, "This kind of spirit can only come out by prayer and fasting." This all started with Kurt fasting for my son. So at this point, I'm completely overwhelmed and freaked out. And I have this trip coming up to see my son. So I fasted for a day before I left. I had never fasted in my life, but I did that and I went out. Similar to when he would have his episodes and he would have to look me in the eyes, and that was how I knew he was okay. I just literally spent 3 days being very intentional and looking him in the eye and telling him that he was going to get better. And I don't know if I 100% believed it. And I don't even know if that's what changed the course of where he went. But when I made that visit, that was probably the low point in the whole period. He had lost a ton of weight. He was in a hospital that looked like a prison. And we had been at this for several years without any good results. But I just kept playing that passage over my head that I had, and Kurt poking me in the chest saying, "You have to make him believe." He had literally turned a corner after that weekend, had started to get better. 3 months later, I had an opportunity to come home to kind of test to see if he was safe at home. And at this point, we had locked down the house. We had put a security system on every door and window so that we knew if a door or window opened, anything that was dangerous had been locked and put away. The house was basically under lockdown. And then for that extra covering, I sent out a request asking a couple of friends in a Google Doc to pick a day that they would pray for my son while he was coming home, so that we would have someone always praying and fasting for him while he was home. And I was looking for like a week of people, and I wound up with 3 people a day for 3 weeks on a fasting relay. And he came home and did great when he was home, went back to the hospital, stayed for another month, and then they let him come home again. We did another fasting relay. We had Catholic priests and nuns on the fasting relay. We had pastors from other churches on the relay. We had friends and family. We just had all kinds of people covering him and fasting and praying for him. And it went amazingly smoothly when he came home. It was a period of lots of fear and concern and just completely covered. About a year after he was home, he decided he wanted to get baptized, which was awesome. His sister had also decided she wanted to get baptized that day. So we got up and went to church early in the morning. He gets to the pool to get baptized. I get a text message. And then my wife gets a text message, which we ignore because our son and daughter are being baptized. And then as he gets baptized and is coming out the other side, and then my phone rings and I ignore it, then my wife's phone rings and she ignores it. And then he gets out and we hug and we cry and I'm like, oh, better check the phone. It was the security company on our home had been trying to reach us. So I call them back and they say, we have a report of a burglary in process at your house. Would you like us to send the police? Our whole family was at church, so it wasn't anyone from our house. So I said, what access point did they enter the house? Security system said, window, my son's bedroom. That's a second story window on the front of the house and not exactly where a burglary is going to happen on the house. So we got home an hour later and we go upstairs to check my son's window, and the window is locked and in place and does not appear to have moved. The alarm on that window had never gone off before. It never went off after. It went off at the very second that he was baptized. Kurt has visions of the devil sitting on the window in my son's room. I'm told I have to make him believe to get better. We have to do prayer and fasting. We go through a ton of healing through all of that. And the second he gets baptized, something has to go out of that room through that window. So that's my story. What did I learn about God through this? I learned that there are spiritual battles going on all the time. A lot of the times we can't see that physically. It wasn't until the end that we saw sort of any physical manifestations of that, but we felt a lot of spiritual warfare going on around us. Maybe what I learned more than anything is that God wants us to rely on him. You know, this is a 3-year journey where it was so hard and so difficult that we had no choice but to lean way into him, because there were things we couldn't do on our own to help our son get better.
Michael, man, what a story to go out on. I'm so happy to report that Michael's son is doing great. He's in high school at the top of his class. That was our last spirit story for this first half of the season. But don't worry, we have so much more in store. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast, because on June 23rd, we're bringing you the second half of Spirit Stories. If you have a story you'd like to share, or if you have questions about the podcast, we would love to hear those. Interact with us over email, podcasts@crossroads.net. And we understand that some of the stories in this series can be upsetting or can leave you with questions that are difficult to answer. If you have an immediate need, we are here for that too. You can reach out to the concierge service at Crossroads Church via email, hello@crossroads.net. Leave your name, your question, or concern. And if you'd rather have a call back than an email, leave a number where we can reach you. Someone will be in touch shortly. Spirit Stories is a production of Crossroads Church in Cincinnati, Ohio.